Welcome to Tech It to the Limit, the humorous and surprisingly informative podcast that makes digital innovation in healthcare as entertaining as it is relevant. I'm Sarah Harper.
And I'm Elliot Wilson. And we're here to pull back the curtain on the world of digital transformation in healthcare.
Don't worry, you don't need a medical degree to join in on the fun. Just a sense of humor and a penchant for all things health tech.
So buckle up, folks. It's time to
Tech It to the Limit.
What's up, Elliot?
What's up, Sarah? Welcome, everyone, to episode 8 of Tech It to the Limit.
I think it might be episode 7, but who gives a crap?
Why can I never get this right?
Because you can't count.
I can't. But you can count on us to bring you amazing content every single month here at Tech It to the Limit. We're so grateful to have you. How you been, Sarah? You all set for spooky season?
I am so set. I have been planning my costume for months, acquiring small bits here and there. I am pumped. So this year, I'm going as an AI bot that's going to replace all doctors. No, just kidding. Just kidding. That is terrifying, right? So fun fact, my son came up with this costume. He's super into superheroes. That's fun to say. I was born on 4th of July, and we had some black cats, and he didn't know that they were called black cats. On the driveway, he's like, Mommy, I want to do Boom Kitty.
Boom Kitty.
That was what he called the firework. I was like, that is an amazing superhero name. And he's like, you should be Boom Kitty for Halloween. I was like, heck yeah. So acquiring little elements of Boom Kitty's costume. She's basically like a tall Catwoman with a pink mohawk who is not having a midlife crisis. She just has really cool hair and is very into method acting. So
really? Interesting.
She's going to have some bubbles and some confetti cannons. And, you know, it's just going to be amazeballs.
That's incredible. I have to see some pictures of Boom Kitty. Does Boom Kitty have any like superpowers, or is she more of like a Batman-esque crime fighter?
She fights unkindness, right? She extends lateral kindness wherever she goes. Free hugs, bubbles, you know, confetti, candy, all the nice things, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's amazing. I look forward to this time of year too, because my kids, you know, it's fun watching kids dress up in Halloween costumes. My youngest is going as Carmen Sandiego for Halloween, which just, you know,
where
be still my millennial heart.
Carmen Sandiego.
I love Rockapella. Can't get enough of them. But anyway.
What about you, Elliot? What are you going to be this year?
Me?
We don't care about your kids.
So last year, I ironically went as a tired, almost 40-year-old. Anyway, this year, I thought I'd put a new spin on the costume and do it unironically.
Please tell me you're going to wear the same pathetic flannel and not sleep the night before.
You mean the one that I'm wearing right now? Yes. Yes. That's the intention.
No, that sounded so mean. I love flannel, and it looks great on you.
Why, thank you. Well, let's not scare the listeners anymore. Why don't we bring them some good news? Who do we have on the show today, Sarah?
Oh, my gosh. Total fangirl moment of a lifetime. We are welcoming two folks named John, Dr. John Noseworthy, former CEO of Mayo Clinic. I used to attend his leadership lectures in a packed Geffen auditorium when my hair was brown, not pink, and it didn't make any boomers squirm in their pews. And now I'm doing him on our podcast with you. It's such an honor and a great full circle moment. So pumped to have Dr. John Noseworthy on the podcast. And why are we having him exactly? Like, what's his area of expertise now that he's no longer at Mayo Clinic? What's he doing these days?
Well, he is leading as chairman the Aegis Digital Consortium of hospital systems working directly with Aegis Ventures on finding innovation from the inside out. But what's really cool about this episode is that we did it with two guests, which is the first time we've brought two guests out. I should say what's interesting other than the guests themselves. Also with us today is the co-founder of Aegis Ventures, John Beadle. Now, John, unlike John Noseworthy, is new to us. So we asked ChatGPT to tell us a little bit about him. And so what we found, he's not a widely recognized name in pop culture or history, but there is a historical figure named John Beadle. He was a 17th century English clergyman and author, and he's known for religious writings during the Puritan era, particularly his work, The Journal or Diary of a Thankful Christian, which reflects Puritan spiritual practices and beliefs. And while John Beadle, our John Beadle, may not be famous in the modern sense, he holds some historical significance within the context of English religious history.
I have to say that the Puritan era was the best era, especially for women.
Oh, yeah. The clothes alone, the fashion.
Mm-hmm. We can't just ask ChatGPT one question, right? Because it's a chat, right? We have to have a conversation with it. So as a follow-up to who the heck is this John Beadle guy, right? We asked ChatGPT to help come up with some health tech inventions that might solve for some of the problems that the 17th century clergyman John Beadle may have faced with his parishioners. So I'll share one of them, and then Elliot, you can tell our listeners about the other. These are pretty hilarious.
Sure.
So the Piety Pulse prayer beads. A set of prayer beads with embedded sensors that monitor your pulse and ensure you're praying with the right intensity. If your heart rate drops below a certain level, indicating you're dozing off or not concentrating, the beads might give you a not so gentle shock to refocus your attention on your devotions.
I mean, that feels very of the time, right?
Yes, very on brand for the Puritans.
Yeah. Or maybe instead the modesty mirror health check, right? Which is a mirror that doesn't just reflect your physical appearance, but also gives you feedback on your spiritual health based on your attire and your demeanor. So like if you're dressed too extravagantly, if you're showing too much ankle maybe, right? The mirror might suggest that you change into a more modest clothing to prevent any, you know, spiritual corruption that could lead to maybe physical ailments, like maybe your humors aren't aligned.
Yeah, some bloodletting is required.
Is in order.
It's Halloween after all.
Get the leeches.
Speaking of Halloween, leeches, and bloodletting, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back for our scary stat smackdown.
Oh, is this a new game?
It's a new game.
I can't wait. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
So, welcome back, listeners. I'm going to introduce this spooky, scary game called Scary Stat Smackdown. Thanks, Elliot, for the homegrown sound effects. Love it.
You got it. Anytime.
Who needs CGI when you have Elliot Wilson? All right, folks, it's time for something truly terrifying. And no, I'm not talking about your insurance deductible. Welcome to our special Halloween edition of Scary Stat Smackdown. In fact, it's the only edition that we've ever had.
Yeah, I was gonna say, right? What?
This game, Elliot and I are going to be throwing out some spine-chilling statistics from the healthcare world. Don't have to search far for those. And challenging one another to guess, are these real numbers? Or have we cooked up something even scarier than the real world? To keep you up at night. Think of it like trick-or-treating, but instead of getting candy, you're getting cold, hard truth. And maybe a few frightening future projections, too. So grab your flashlights, kids. Get under your blankets and let's see if we can tell the difference between what's real and what's a healthcare horror story in the making. Oh.
All right. So this time, though, the prize for the winner
what do I win?
Is Oh, what do you win? You haven't won yet.
It's my turn.
So how,
I'm
you
a
know.
millennial. It's my turn.
Well, the winner gets to wrap their kid up in bubble wrap after Halloween, after eating all of their candy, and get it, and ship them off to the loser, to the loser's house for the rest of November.
We're wrapping up our kids in suffocation hazards? Are you nuts? Okay. Prompt clearly says that the winner gets to wrap their kids Halloween sugar haul.
No, I totally read that wrong. I totally read that.
And you can ship a kid in a box.
I totally read that wrong. I seriously all right, no, it's fine. I'll wrap my kid up in bubble wrap and I'll put her in a crate and send her off.
They've been
you
naughty.
Deal with them after that much candy.
Oh my god, that is actually more of a punishment than sending the candy itself. Yes. Sending the hyper kid. Let's just leave it in. It's great. Let's leave this whole thing in.
I think so. Leave it. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
No more editing. This is raw, potty mouth. Mom humor.
All right. Let's get started. How are we doing this, Sarah? How are we doing this? Okay. So we're 5-5, right? We're doing five rounds.
Yeah, well, winner
takes all.
Yeah, winner takes all the offspring. Okay. Yes, I'll start. I'm going to read you a stat and I'm going to give you the source. Okay. So it's and you're going to tell me, why don't we say you're going to tell me reality or.
Is it real or fake?
Or is it real or reality or nightmare? Right? Like, because this is
reality nightmare. Ooh, okay. I like this.
All right. Ooh. So here you go. Here's the first one. About 90% of Americans age 65 and older rely on Medicare for health coverage. Source is the Kaiser Family Foundation.
Reality.
Ooh, ding ding ding. That's a horrible sound effect. Ding 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 ding. I can't do it. All right. Good job, Edge. All right. It's my turn.
Yes. That's awesome. Okay. According to the Center for Healthcare Quality and Payment Reform, within the next 10 years, 50% of rural hospitals will be at risk of closing.
Oh, I should know this one, given the fact that I serve rural patients through my work. I'm going to say that that's a nightmare because you hesitated and changed the time period from something to 10.
On. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, you're right. That is true. So that is a nightmare. However, the real stat is 25% of rural hospitals are at risk of closing. And that was before the pandemic.
Yeah. Ooh,
so, yeah. Well, that's the kind of ghost town no one wants to end up
in. Johnny does not want to look under his bed tonight. All right.
So that's a 1-1, Sarah.
1-1.
Hit me.
All right. The U.S. healthcare system wastes over $1 trillion annually due to inefficiencies.
$1
trillion? Mm-hmm. Oh, the source is JAMA. JAMA.
I say that's reality.
You are so close if you round up. No! It's a horror story.
What is it, like 800 billion?
Yeah, pretty much. Between 760 and 935 billion. Yeah.
Wow.
I know, but the projection is that by 2025, you will be right. It'll be up to a trillion. So fun times, America.
Wow. What's a couple $100 billion amongst friends, you know? Mm. Okay. According to the Association of American Medical Colleges, by 2034, there will be a shortage of up to 200,000 physicians.
By 2034?
Mm-hmm.
That's a rando number.
Well, it was a recent article, I assume. And so they were like doing the whole decade looking out thing.
Okay, it's reality.
Oh, you
wrong. You were such a loser.
I did.
I should have followed my gut.
It's like Night of the Living Physicians out here, The Walking Dead. But to me, this is even scarier. I mean, it's like, it's not like the real stat is any less scary.
Right.
It's 124,000 physicians by the year 2034. So it's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad
already.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's pretty bad already.
It's like,
all right. So that's one. So that is,
we're 1-1.
1-1 still.
Okay.
After two rounds.
Right. Great. Here's a stat. Healthcare workers spend 4 hours per day on administrative tasks, according to Health Affairs.
It depends on what you classify as a healthcare worker.
I know. This is like, are we really going to do that right now?
All right, fine. I'm going to go with reality.
It's 2 hours per day.
What is it? Two and a half?
Yeah, 2 hours per day, but by 2030, it's projected to be four, right? So awesome. We are rolling down the tracks like a runaway train on waste wheels.
Yeah, let's get some LLMs up in here, yo.
Hey, we each have 1 point still, right?
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Okay. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, nearly one in five healthcare workers have left the field since the pandemic started. Again, it's like, how do you define healthcare worker?
Right. Fact. True fact.
No, it's not that bad.
God.
It's only one in 10 healthcare workers that have left the field since the pandemic.
All right. I guess I'm a cynic or a pessimist. One of the two, right? Right.
Yeah.
This game is bringing my mood down, man. All right.
But you know what I think? If I'm looking at this, I'm like, you know, we seem to both be believing that
right
fake facts are real.
Fake news.
Which, you know, in the context of AI is a whole nother thing. But we're really cynical about the healthcare industry, you and I.
I know. Yeah, we need to get out and get some sunshine and ride on a few rainbows, I think. That would help.
Heck yeah.
All right. Tiebreaker, right?
This is round five.
So, okay, here we go. About 5% of healthcare spending in the U.S. goes to public health efforts. 5%. According to the Commonwealth Fund.
I'm going to say nightmare because I don't think it's that high.
It is true fact. We spend 5% on healthcare spending. 5% of healthcare spending is on public health efforts. By 2028, the Commonwealth Fund predicts that only 3% of our healthcare spending will go to public health efforts. Because you clearly ineffective. All right, hit me with my number five, numero cinco.
Fine. According to John Hopkins Medicine, medical errors are the second leading cause of death in the U.S.
Oh!
False! It's the third leading cause of death.
Dang it.
I mean, that's still too high.
You know, I should be upset about the fact that humans are killing each other, but I'm just mad that I'm losing in the game.
But like, even accidentally.
Yeah, it's not intentional. I didn't mean to do it. Okay.
I'll tell you what. I say we had a full tie, true tie, and we each send each other the candy from the other.
How about we just dump the candy in the trash and move on?
Yes. Heck yes. All right. So side fact. Every Halloween or at the beginning of October, my family has this big jar of candy. And every night at dinner on the weekends, the kids are allowed to have dessert. Mm. And they're allowed to pick one or two pieces of candy out of the candy bowl. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that's how we'd be like, no, you can't eat all your candy tonight. It goes in the candy bowl.
Right.
And that candy bowl lasts through to Christmas. And then it gets filled up with more candy from Christmas.
Yes.
And then, you know, Easter comes around. There's more candy in there. And Valentine's Day candy goes in and blah, 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 blah. And so we never fill up that. We never have to buy candy for that bowl, but we have to empty it out come October because there's still like the Tootsie Rolls at the bottom that nobody wanted from the Halloween the week year before.
You are literally describing my life, right? Like I had the bin downstairs in my pantry with the Tootsie Roll that's like smashed into the bottom because it was from last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
My kids have really, really healthy teeth because I limit the amount of sugar they're able to consume, right?
Yes, 100%. But we're so long past having any kind of anything that even resembles a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Because I ate all those during my meetings. And yeah, I was like, I don't know, a fan of them. Okay, I love that we're like the same.
Yeah. All right,
peace out.
So there it is. We tied for the first time ever. I'm going to be magnanimous and allow you to be on the same level as me instead of lording it over you as I normally do. How magnanimous of me. Well, listeners, thank you so much. That was so great to have that time with you and joining us for that scary stat smackdown. Coming up next, we have our two guests, Dr. John Noseworthy and John Beadle from Aegis Ventures.
Stay tuned.
Stick around. We'll be right back. introducing Pre-Auth-Pocalypse, the world's first AI-powered, hoop-busting prior authorization wrangler designed to make your claims sail past the insurance gatekeepers faster than you can say, denied again? Tired of spending hours on hold while listening to smooth jazz only to find out your request still needs additional review? With Pre-Auth-Pocalypse, you can kiss those soul-sucking phone calls goodbye. Our AI uses quantum predictive analytics and a dash of SaaS to preemptively fill out forms, navigate insurance loopholes, and even outsmart that random insurer rule about only faxing claims. Yes, faxing. But that's not all. Pre-Auth-Pocalypse comes equipped with InsuraSleuth, an exclusive detective mode that identifies hidden policy changes, stealthy form updates, and those mysterious exclusions insurers conveniently forget to tell you about. It even sends real-time reminders when the insurer tries to add one more form and alerts you when someone is about to pull the "your patient didn't try ibuprofen first" card. Side effects may include spontaneous breakdancing when your claims actually get approved, mild overconfidence in taking on insurance companies, and an increased fondness for your AI overlords. Other side effects may include starting heated office debates about the relative worth of quantum computing. Pre-Auth-Pocalypse is not responsible for insurer meltdowns, fax machine rage, or feelings of invincibility when denying denials. Always check with your CFO before binge billing. Pre-Auth-Pocalypse, because your time is worth more than their hold music.
Welcome back, listeners. We are so excited to introduce our two guests to you today, John Beadle and Dr. John Noseworthy. So without further ado, here we go. In a world where innovation is the new religion, John Beadle emerges as a devotee of smart, thoughtful digital transformation in medicine. Co-founding Aegis Ventures, John works with health systems to identify and solve their most troubling problems, including clinician burnout, inequity, and the unholy trinity of poor experience, high cost, and bad outcomes. Leading the Aegis Digital Consortium is just another day in this crusader's journey, where he gathers 9 health systems in a quest not for salvation, but for scalable solutions. His covenant with Northwell Health is proof that John's zeal for healthcare innovation knows no bounds. John's strategic acumen, forged at Harvard and refined in the crucible of global affairs, ensures he's not just making statements, he's making a difference.
Dr. John Noseworthy is no stranger to the world of healthcare. As the chairman of the Aegis Digital Consortium, Dr. Noseworthy, not to be confused with New Orleans blues legend Dr. John, is orchestrating a symphony of innovation across 9 health systems. He's got a flair for turning the ordinary into the extraordinary. His legacy as Mayo Clinic CEO is the healthcare equivalent of a Grammy, where he hit all the right notes to make it the number one ranked hospital in the world. Now he's guiding digitally enabled strategic plans, ensuring that each system harmonizes perfectly while tackling the big issues of quality, cost, experience, and equity. Dr. Noseworthy is here to remind us all that in healthcare, as in jazz, it's all about how you improvise and capitalize in the face of new opportunities. Welcome, Dr. Noseworthy. May I call you Dr. John?
Absolutely, Ilya. Thanks so much for having us.
All right. Well, we like to keep things light and fun on Tech It to the Limit. So we always kick our interviews off with a starter question. And this one, I anticipate a feeding frenzy. So whoever wants to take it, what's your favorite dad joke?
Well, Elliot and Sarah, it's great to be with you. I am not a dad. Dr. Noseworthy is, but I'll still take this question. And I think I found a medical one that I think would be interesting. Why did the doctor laugh at the x-ray? Because it was humorous.
I love it. It's even punny. Perfect. Perfect.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. A way to take one for the team there, John Beadle. So first serious question of the interview, this is going to be a question for John Beadle. AI-powered solutions that claim to solve for workforce shortages and clinician burnout are pervasive. For health systems, it can be daunting discerning between hopeful wonder kids and the real deal. What advice would you give to provider organizations that are walking the health tech gauntlet for the first time? How do you see initiatives at Aegis Ventures making a real difference where others have fallen short?
It's a great question, Sarah, and I know it's something that health system leaders across the country are spending a lot of time and mental bandwidth thinking about, particularly given just the pace of technological change and the extent to which solutions have totally transformed what's possible, especially as it relates to generative AI and recent transformations that we've seen in ways workflows can be transformed, entire processes that can be automated, and solutions which, at least at the surface, can drive extraordinary impactful change. However, I think what everyone has been scarred from to some extent is the fact that over the last decade or so, there's been a lot of solutions in search of a problem that haven't yielded the right ROI or demonstrated the level of efficacy that was promised upon initially being sold to the health system. And so there's definitely a high degree of skepticism whenever you're a digital health company walking into a room with a set of health system executives. At the same time, I think there's an extraordinary desire among the health systems that we see every day to implement these solutions, but they want to do it in a way that's safe, effective, protects their patients, their clinicians, and all the other key stakeholders across the system. And so I think the fact that it's challenging to get some of these solutions in is emblematic of the fact that healthcare is incredibly complex and difficult, and health system leaders need to approach these types of things with an extraordinary degree of caution. At the same time, I think what we're seeing is just an extraordinary proliferation of solutions that really are driving change. We're developing a lot of them, and I think we're seeing on the front lines the amount of impact that they can actually drive when they're thoughtfully implemented and executed. The biggest advice I would give them is picking solutions and partners that are proven, have the right ROI, have really seasoned teams with track records at the helm that have done this before in other contexts. Hopefully they've worked in healthcare, just given how different it can be from other industries. The other element of it is change management is often the most challenging element of actually rolling out these solutions. And so ensuring that you have the right resources in place and that it's not only top down, but bottoms up. I think something we've found is we're co-developing these solutions with health systems is that if you don't have the right clinical champions or business unit champions that are willing to really roll these things out in a robust way and support all the changes that are required to workflows, to processes, to make sure they're successful, it can be really challenging to drive enduring change. And so ensuring that you have both that top-down and bottoms-up support, I think, is essential. And the way we do that, as you noted in my introduction, is we'll partner really shoulder to shoulder with the health systems in co-developing these solutions, in building champions who have the ability to serve as references for us when we go bring these things to new places. And that's really essential to our model, and it's something that Dr. Noseworthy, I know, cares deeply about as well from his time at Mayo.
That whole concept of change management being such a critical component is a recurring theme when we're talking to leaders and healthcare leaders on the podcast. It's so true, and it seems like a lesson we always kind of have to keep learning, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah,
I mean, Dr. Noseworthy has lived this and has some great stories about change management from Mayo. I'll give this one over to him.
Well, change is difficult. We all know that, and health systems are complex, healthcare is complex. But the reason, to be honest, a cute little story, I guess, is what am I doing here? And why did I decide to do this? Having heard pitches all through my retirement years, no one said what he just said. They said, look, our premise is that innovation is lying dormant within the health systems, and we need to help that emerge and help co-develop and co-create it by bringing our technology solutions to what the health system needs. They're the experts. We have to listen to them. And it's our job to create solutions that will be lasting and make a big difference in whatever it is they're trying to change. And I haven't heard that from any other company or any other leader in the startup space or the established business space that are looking to change things. And yeah, we did that at Mayo Clinic. We embedded our teams in several hundred clinical practice reengineering efforts, as well as on the business side. And there, by having the right people who can listen to what are we doing, what doesn't work, why doesn't it work, what have we tried, what are the timelines and deliverables and metrics that we need, what does success look like, describing the problem and understanding the problem is really half the battle. So once you've done that, you can say, well, where are we today and where do we want to be next time? And that's what Aegis is set up to do. It was brilliant. Quite frankly, within 10 minutes talking to the headhunter, I said to my wife, you know, I may want to do this, having turned down every other thing that had come my way except for board work and some other consulting. And it's been a great year. I'm a senior advisor. I love the company. I love the people. And I think the approach is kind of unique to co-invest and co-develop together. And hats off to John and his team. It's amazing.
It's been an amazing team effort. I mean, I think the combination of Dr. Noseworthy with Dr. Feinberg, who is our executive chairman at Aegis, has been an extraordinary duo in ensuring that we can represent the health system's interests as we're building all of these companies. And it's driven a huge amount of impact as we've been building these things out.
Hats off to you, John Beadle, for snagging the industry's most eligible leadership bachelor. So, I mean, it means a lot that Dr. John agreed to come and lead this with you.
So, Dr. John, clearly you were snagged up as Sarah said, as a bachelor, and I think that's great that you put a ring on it. You're now at the helm of Aegis Digital Consortium, bringing together 9 health systems to innovate collectively. You know, 9, as you've called it, dormant areas of innovation to kind of pull that out, right? I imagine that's a lot like being assigned to recess duty on the first day of school. Kind of like, what's the biggest challenge in getting these huge organizations to collaborate effectively? Like, play nice in the sandbox, share the toy steamroller, you know? What strategies have you been finding are the most successful in aligning their goals, their actions, their projects that they take on?
Well, I spent the first half of my education life majoring in recess, so I feel as though I understand it. As I remember, when folks are at recess, they have lots of energy and enthusiasm. And if you look back and define productivity in a different way, recess is often very productive. It is for kids, I think, in a sense, although I haven't thought of this job as being a schoolmaster. There's an important principle I think I want to just clarify, Elliot. Every health system is different. They're incredibly different. They're large, they're small, they're urban, they're rural, they're both, they're academic, they're community, they're science-based, they're business-based, or they're practice-based. They have different payment models. And we have all of that, geographically distributed in different areas. And we have amazing health system partners, as you know, and as you've briefly alluded to. There's no competition here. There's no ego, there's no elbowing. Some of those things that happen at recess, they all join willingly, voluntarily, enthusiastically, because they respect each other. And they also know that by themselves, with what they're doing, they're not where they want to be. And a few years ago, no one would admit how tough all this is. You know, we're all kept it very closed. We had our hand closed. And now we all realize that healthcare is really tough. It's tough to be successful, tough to get the quality that you want. It's tough to be financially successful. But here's the difference. Aegis's job, in my opinion, is to create a trusted partnership with a big health system. And then do it again with the next health system. And then do it again with the next health system. And as that evolves, and that's where we are now, Elliot, understanding what their needs are, what their expectations are, and most importantly, what are their strategic priorities? What are they having trouble? What do they want to fix? And we ask them that, we listen carefully, and then we tell them what we think we've heard. And then we say, here's what we're already doing. Is there anything here that you think? We think portfolio company A, B, C, or D might be helpful. Or do you have a plan to create a new company? What new company would you like us to spin out from our venture studio, and so on? And then you go to health system 2 and 3 and 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And you realize, wait a minute, health system 4 and health system 6 are both want to work on the same thing. And if they're comfortable, we can share best practices, we can share learnings, we can share successes and failures. Maybe we'll share resources, maybe we'll share where do they want to be on the cap table if they're going to make an investment, and so on and so forth. So we have to start small, think big, and go fast. That's a phrase you've heard from lots of people. But I guess what underlies this is, if we are successful, and I believe we will be, we're working hard to do so. If we're successful, if we're a trusted partner and the best partner they have, and we do that with each or most of these health systems, then we'll be successful. They'll want to do more with us, and others will want to join. You know how that goes. But if we get going too fast and try to think like there's a consortium, we all have to think the same way or do the same thing, That would feel to me, at least, like an obligation rather than an opportunity. And we're trying to stress there's no team uniform, there's no team meetings, there's no language or song or handshake. We're here to help you. We're also trying to help them and them and them and them. And they all know each other. They respect each other. And again, I don't know where this is going to go, but if it is close to being as successful as I think it is, this will be lasting and it'll be durable and it may be a model and it may be something that allows a significant change in the way healthcare is experienced and delivered that goes beyond any single health system. That's our goal. But again, understand each one of them because they're all different. You figure out one, you go to the next one. Their culture is different. The way they make decisions, decision rights, resource allocation, metrics, culture, how they change, all that stuff is different across all these health systems. And that's okay. We just have to understand it so that we can co-develop the future with them. And hopefully they'll invest with us in the things that they're most interested in, as well as being partners.
This is music to my ears, Dr. John, because it sounds like collaborative capitalism to me. That's evidence-based, right? We're talking about learning from one another and proliferating those lessons across the ecosystem rather than keeping them behind boardroom doors. And it reminds me, if you'll indulge me for a moment, a quote that I've heard you share on previous podcasts and in previous leadership lectures that I attended when you were CEO of Mayo Clinic. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that's essentially the ethos of this collaborative, innovative model that you've started here at Aegis. So my hat's off to you. This is so cool.
Thank you, Sarah. That's a Chinese saying. I wish I had developed it, but I use it a lot and I think it helps.
Boy, you could have walked away with that one. Talk about him.
He's too humble.
A man with integrity.
It's that Canadian
here.
Humility.
That's one of our core values.
That's
to
double
click on one thing that Dr. Noseworthy mentioned that I think is really essential to the success of what we're doing. Ultimately, we want the health systems to work together, and they are. But I think the bedrock of our partnership is the fact that it's a one-to-one relationship with Aegis at its core, where we can serve all of their needs individually. And then given the extent to which we've studied and have worked on their individual strategic plans, what we often discover among the dozen or so health systems we're working with is these five are really focused on digital front door. These six are really focused on back office automation. And then given that we have this bird's eye view, what we can do is pull them together in unique arrangements. And then they can collaborate and amortize costs to develop solutions that benefit all of them and then have the ability to be competitive with the types of offerings that only the scaled national players, the large retail players, payers, pharma, you know, all the other folks that are far better resourced than they are could produce. And given that we have the ability to turn these into companies that can attract best-in-class entrepreneurial talent versus initiatives that are bred within a health system and stay there forever, they can be far more effective and have far more velocity and higher success rate. So that's really the core of what we're trying to do.
Well, there's a visible marketability plan, right? I mean, when you're able to do that. So you're saving on the front end by sharing the buckets of water between everybody, right? And then
absolutely.
Then you're making it, you're increasing the ROI on the back end by making it marketable outside of those locations which would have otherwise kept it hidden to themselves, right? And that's that collaborative capitalism, which, by the way, is my new rock band name that Sarah was alluding to earlier.
Hey,
I like that.
Elliot, I heard a joke recently that for millennials, hey, do you want to start a podcast is like the new, hey, do you want to start a band?
That's right. That's great. Yeah. That's great.
So a funny story on that briefly. So the first name of Aegis before we actually named it was Startup Machine. So we used to joke that we were going to build a machine that pops up startups. And so the first registered name of Aegis Ventures was not Aegis Venture Partners, but Startup Machine LLC. And then we finally changed it. But I occasionally get some documents to sign where it says formerly known as Startup Machine LLC. And when I did it, I had no idea it would permanently stay on some of these documents. Man. But I was That's once told fabulous. It sounds like a band of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs.
Yeah. 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 No, it totally is. It's a garage band of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, John B, I just kind of bring us back to the digital part of the conversation here. AI enabled diagnostics, workflow automation. You talked about back end automations there, emotion analytics. Health system boardrooms are rife with people talking about these buzzwords, but they're also core to the companies that you are building. So how do you cut through the hype to ensure that the technologies that you're developing actually deliver on those gargantuan promises, and especially when those stakes are so high in healthcare?
It's a terrific question, and it's something that folks are talking about very actively, as you know, in boardrooms every day. I think our model really emanates from the core belief, as Dr. Noseworthy has mentioned, that health systems know their problems really well. And so I think a lot of the most recent generation of health tech has first started with a technology and not with a problem. And so you see a lot of situations where you have a really exciting, really interesting technology, but it's not being applied to a problem that is meaningful or significant. And so you often get vitamins instead of painkillers. And I think we're very focused on things that health systems are telling us are, you know, heartburn, significant problems that are keeping them up at night. And so we typically start with that problem, deeply understand the end user, will work backwards from that problem, co-develop a solution with them, and get their feedback every single step of the way. And we'll actually forward deploy engineering teams, product teams, et cetera, to shadow and really work in the trenches shoulder to shoulder with the teams of end users that are going to be deploying these things. And we really treat the first five or so large enterprise reference customers as co-development partners and call them that, given that most of these solutions, as we all know, require a really significant degree of user feedback, just given the fact that every health system is different, as Dr. Noseworthy notes. Everyone's using different instances of EHRs and has lots of other technologies and bespoke solutions they've built. And so there's always a degree of customization that needs to happen. And whenever you customize something, there's new and unintended impacts. And so given that that's the case, the services component of most of what we're doing ends up being really critical. And I think a lot of folks who are building pure play technology solutions, when they try to come into healthcare, they often miss the fact that there really is a degree of customization that's required at the beginning to make sure that whatever you're using is not applied in a purely cookie cutter way that doesn't work for that particular system, but you're taking the time and the initiative to ensure that it's being applied in a way that fits into their workflow, is properly integrated in all their source systems, and all the other major IT investments they've made. And so for us, that really comes down to viewing ourselves as that core co-development partner. And once you get to five or six customers, these things can be applied with, I think, a much higher degree of flexibility, because there's certain permutations that I think are universally used. And once you have six or so implementations, there's components of what you've learned that you can reapply, but it really does take you quite a while to apply it in a killer way for the first six times or so. And so in that, given that that's the case, we really try to be very patient and thoughtful in how we do this. And so that's how we've applied. That's how we've approached this problem.
I know I'm going to channel my inner Sarah Harper here for a second, and I know how excited she is to hear that you are sending a vanguard of developers to live side by side and shadow users and real people to experience the challenges that they're experiencing in real life. My question on that, because I have some experience with that in my professional life as well. You're coming in as an outside partner, and there is, and this kind of goes back to our change management conversation from earlier, but you're coming in as this external entity. And so you're not even coming in with a Northwell badge or what have you, right? So your folks are coming in as Aegis. How much of a wall do you find users that you are trying to collaborate with at the front lines? I know the folks at mid-level and up and so on that are working with you from a business perspective, they get it. Not to say that frontline foot workers don't, but I imagine there's a level of trust that has to be built up. And do you experience that, and how do you work through that?
The trust is really everything. I think you hit on a couple of really terrific points, Elliot, that we've experienced over the last 4 years or so as we've been doing this. as you mentioned, that top-down support is critical. But I think something we've found that's most essential in driving the success of a project is a team of really willing end users that are desperate for a solution to something and want to work with us and devote their time to the co-development process, which is intensive and pulls them away from their roles. And so it's something that we look for as a really critical determinant of whether we even want to do a project. There's a great story in, you know, Ben Horowitz's book, The Hard Thing About Doing Hard Things, where he talks about the fact that when people, for example, go, you know, say you have a cloud transformation project, you go to the big data center and say, we're going to be moving this to the cloud. And it always takes 5 years because all those people look at it and say, what does this mean for my job, right? And so a lot of the things that we're doing are things that are automation solutions. They're very scary to people, as you can imagine, because everyone always thinks about how is this going to affect me and my career. And so to give you an example of an automation solution that could have been perceived as a threat, we viewed it not as one entirely. And so we went in, this was for case management automation at one of our health system partners, where we were automating a process of discharge for LTAC and SNF that was taking 2.5 or 3 hours for a single nurse case manager to do. And we co-developed this solution with that team of case managers. And the way we framed it initially, and this is something that's true and the truth is strong, ultimately it's hard to be convincing if you're not saying something you don't believe. But what we came in and said was, congratulations, you're all being promoted. You're now managers of an army of bots that are going to make your life a lot easier. And given that nurse case managers are among the most scarce resources in a health system, and that team was having trouble growing and having trouble staying on top of their work, they welcomed us. And they've been our greatest champions as we've gone and sold this to other health systems. And when we'll talk to, you know, case managers at health system, you know, and at health system 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they always want to know, can we talk to the case managers who you developed this with? And they're our greatest source of referrals and testimonials because they love the process. And I think we've built an indispensable solution for them that they now couldn't do their jobs without.
That's amazing. I have to say, you know, it's pretty powerful marketing right there, but also it's co-design at its finest. And I frequently talk about how my kids go to a Montessori school. And their philosophy and education is follow the child. And in a way, you're kind of bringing that ethos to the design room and saying, you know, what are the problems you're trying to solve? Let's lead with those. I'll take your hand and follow you, right? And that's what's going to make sure that I not only bring you along, right? But we get to our destination and you essentially have fully adopted the tool. By the time we're ready to implement. I also just want to say, you made a comment earlier, John Beadle, about trust, you know, and follow up to Elliot's question. Excellent question. I had the same one. In my experience, it's trust is positively correlated with the amount of listening you do, right? Mm-hmm. And coffee and smiles certainly don't hurt, but the more you talk, the less trust you're going to build with your end users. So it sounds like you guys are doing an incredible job of that at Aegis. Bravo.
We get that from Dr. Noseworthy. That's the first thing he tells everyone when they join, is that we need to listen above everything. I mean, Dr. Noseworthy, I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that. I know it's something that you really earnestly believe.
Oh, you both said it really well. No, I agree completely. Remember David Feinberg, Dr. Feinberg said, listen respectfully. They're the experts. You're lucky to be in the room.
Yeah.
These are healthcare professionals. You're here to help them, but you can't help them if you're talking. David got to the same place very fast. That's really nice piece there. I really appreciate the positive response that you've given us to the way we're approaching it. It means a lot. You've done a lot of this kind of stuff. It takes time. You know, it's not easy. I think as you said at Montessori, you'll go much faster holding the kid's hand than if you're pushing him along. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, Elliot probably thinks that I hold stock in Montessori, if that were even possible, because I love to brag about it. But
she talks about it all the time.
I know. I'm like, hey, have you heard about Montessori method? Actually, Dr. John is very familiar with it because his grandchildren are a product of Montessori education as well. So the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. We're going to wrap it up with a question for both of you, but I'm going to start by asking Dr. John, looking ahead, how do you envision the role of health systems in driving innovation? Do you think that we're going to see health systems taking the lead in developing their own technologies, or are they primarily going to rely on partnerships with external innovators like Aegis Ventures?
Well, I think they will always remain at the center of innovation. They have for essentially the last 150 years. They know the problems and they're very clever and they want to fix things and they can see what's working and what isn't working. But whether they build or buy or partner, I think, or a blend of the three, I imagine that will continue to be a good paradigm going forward. And sometimes they'll build and sometimes they'll buy and sometimes they'll partner. We want to partner and build together. I kind of doubt that that many health systems will try to build everything. The margins are narrow. It's not their core business, really, being a technology company. So I think there'll be a lot of partnerships, but it'll be a blend. I think what I'm hoping that will come from this, from John's insight, that partnering in the right way with companies as a tech company, right way with health systems, will help them get there faster. If we do it right, I think this may become a dominant model. And everyone says health systems are slow to move and they don't like change. Well, they've been sold so many, they've seen so many false prophets in their life. And this is going to improve your life. Well, it doesn't. But if you co-develop it, in my experience, if you co-develop something and it works, doctors and nurses will change on a dime, literally, and do a product that's better for them, better for the patients, better for the community. So I'm very bullish on this.
I would echo everything Dr. Noseworthy mentioned. I think one of our foundational beliefs has always been that health systems are extraordinary sources of innovation. They always have been. And I think one of the challenges, though, with developing companies within a health system versus bespoke solutions just for them is that health systems don't naturally have entrepreneurs and engineers and data scientists and folks who can go out and scale solutions that can be viable in the market. And so I think what we've tried to do, and I think you'll see a lot more of this going forward, is build complementary skill sets with those that exist within the health system so that we can leverage this model of outside-in innovation where there's certain parts of the innovation process that make sense to have within the core confines of the health system. And there's other elements of it that taking it outside, you can move a lot faster. And so I think for us, it's really all about how do you create this interesting mosaic of being within the system when it makes sense to do so, and then also being able to leverage some of the best elements of startups and entrepreneurial skill sets, which wouldn't necessarily want to go work in a health system, but would love to work with health systems through, you know, the ability to work in a startup. And so, and the other nice element of that as well is health systems, as Dr. Noseworthy mentioned, facing a lot of challenges right now. There's an extraordinary amount of margin pressure. The business of healthcare has never been more challenged. And I think all health systems realize that they're asset rich. They have extraordinary assets that can be leveraged and remain untapped and somewhat cash poor. And one of the ways to solve that is to partner with entrepreneurial groups who can help them take those assets and turn them into monetizable businesses that can help them reinvest in the core business of delivering care, of investing in their workforce, of building new facilities, of investing in cutting edge treatments, which are the things they're extraordinarily good at. And so I think as we look at how we can partner with health systems, the way we think of ourselves is as a wraparound revenue and margin diversification partner, where we can partner with them to ensure that all the extraordinary assets they have are being best utilized in a way that can drive new sources of revenue and margin to the system. And at the same time, we can use those solutions to help solve core business challenges. So that's really how we, you know, aspire to be viewed over time. And as we've discussed earlier, healthcare really is all about people caring for other people, and it's built on trust. And so trust is our number one asset in being able to do that, given that, you know, lots of other groups that have come in and tried to do this in the past have not treated them in a way, you know, that puts their interests first. So that's really how we've tried to approach all these partnerships.
Well, I love the concept that you put out there around outside-in innovation and thinking about the assets that the healthcare organizations bring to the table and think about what are they? They're the healthcare specific expertise, right? You know, you are privileged to be in the room to hear them speak, right? That clinical knowledge, that clinical experience, that's one giant asset. And then the other giant asset that I see that's supporting this model is the problems that they're experiencing. And when they start to view their problems as an asset that they can then go work with an outside innovation company to solve for, that can change their whole mindset around. And I just, this whole, again, this, I wrote it down, this outside in innovation, I love it.
I think Elliot and I are going to have a really difficult time competing for nuggets that we discuss after the interview in our final segment of the show, because it's just, this is a gold mine of insight and wisdom. So John, thank you so much for joining us. It's truly an honor to feature to host both of you on the show and to feature Aegis Ventures. Thank you.
It's been a privilege. Thanks so much, Sarah and Elliot.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Elliot.
And we're out.
All righty.
That was great. Thank you so much.
Is your healthcare office still using a fax machine? Seriously? Did you also ride a dinosaur to work this morning? Well, you're in luck because it's time to meet Faxosaurus Rex. The Faxosaurus Rex isn't just a machine. It's a prehistoric hero here to eat those fax machines you should have retired in 1995. Picture this. Every time someone tries to send a fax, the Rex roars and gobbles it up. No more paper jams, no more busy signals, just a giant dinosaur smashing outdated tech faster than you could say, "What's a modem?" And for a limited time, we're offering the Jurassic upgrade. We'll send your last fax for you. It's just a picture of a giant meteor with the words, "You're next." So if you're ready to step into the future by leaving the Cretaceous period behind, get yourself a Faxosaurus Rex today by visiting www.imreadytoadult.duh. Enter the promo code Theropod for a free I'm a Big Boy rewards chart that can be used every time you decide to send an email instead. Faxosaurus Rex, because in healthcare, extinction has never looked so good.
Welcome back, listeners, to Tech It to the Limit. I am famished after listening to that amazing interview with Dr. John Noseworthy and John Beadle. There is nothing I would love more than to snack on something tasty, something.
Some wise nugs?
Some wise nugs. Yes, I would love some. I don't know about you, Sarah, but that was such a rich conversation that I certainly walked away with a number of sort of wisdom nuggets that I liked. I just want to hit on two really quickly. So
yeah, hit them.
The first one, you know, Dr. John mentioned something about not turning the consortium into an obligation. And I thought that was really important to kind of have to keep that perspective. And he talked about when you've seen one health system, you've seen one health system, right? Every health system being different, whether you're community or academic or you're, you know, maybe you're the VA, whatever it is, right? You know, you're rural, you're urban, et cetera. And there isn't a way that you can do this successfully where you try to make everybody do the same thing within this consortium. Once it becomes this thing that you have to do, this obligation you have to do, that everybody's got to wear the same uniform when they walk into the room to sit around the table and behave the exact same way, people lose interest in it. And so my takeaway from that was their ability to have this sort of bird's eye view and personalized approach to each of these different organizations. So by being a consortium that is not necessarily competing with each other in any way, but not all doing the same thing. They have this bird's eye view that they can say, okay, this group over here and this group over here are having the same kind of problem that they want to focus on. Let's bring them together to solve that problem, that issue that they're having. These two are encountering the same maybe back office issues, right? How do we bring those two together? So the idea being that you focus different groups on the same kinds of problems that they're trying to solve, instead of trying to solve one problem across this broad swath of different organizations where you'll get nowhere.
Right.
So I really like that concept that Dr. John was talking about. The other one, I think, I honestly can't remember whether Dr. John said it or John Beadle said it. But it was in reference to working on solutions that don't really solve the problem that you're trying to solve. And he described them as vitamins, not painkillers, where these healthcare organizations go and find a vitamin that they think that's flashy and not FDA approved. And they try and use it to solve a problem instead of the actual painkiller that's going to, you know, at least numb the pain. But I wanted to take that a step further and say, you don't really want a painkiller either, right? Because that's just solving a symptom,
right?
I might solve the pain of something, but I'm not stopping the core reason for that solution. So I just wanted to take that one step further and say, get your damn antibiotic,
right? Or your proton beam, or fresh fruits and veggies.
Hey, look, and sometimes it's surgery. Right. Yeah. And you have to excise the tumor.
Right.
But like taking that one step further, it's not just about vitamins and pain. But I like the way that he referenced that.
Yeah.
You got to focus on actually solving the problem.
My money is on Beadle. If my memory is correct, I think our friend, the Puritan minister, stated that, made that analogy. And yeah, great insights, Elliot. I love it. And I think because it's Halloween, we can't say excise the tumor. We have to say exercise the demon. But, you know.
Exercise the demon. Yes. Yes.
Especially in light of our clergyman friend from the 16th, 17th century. All right. My nuggets.
Hit me.
Okay. Aegis, formerly known as Startup Machine. Holy amazeballs. I love their model of collaborative capitalism.
Yes.
Sort of creating a learning system, a learning partnership between entrepreneurs and healthcare systems that, as Dr. John Knowsworthy said, was like committed to improving the way healthcare is delivered that goes beyond any one system. Boom. That's their vision, right? They want to solve these systemic problems that we were talking about earlier in the scary stat smackdown together, right? It's kind of like an apocalyptic moment, almost like a pre-apocalyptic moment, right before the whole system collapses. And John and John are like, hey, guys, we got to huddle here, right? Like, we can see the meteors coming, and let's fix this together. It's the only way we're going to solve this problem, right? So I love that. Another great insight.
I'm sorry. I have visions of Aerosmith playing while Bruce Willis, you know, hits the bomb. The asteroid blows apart. This is amazing.
Oh my gosh. Orange spacesuits out the nose.
Yes. Out the nose worthy.
Out the nose.
Sorry. Sorry.
Oh, amazeballs. Okay.
That's terrible.
No, it's okay. I think he would find it funny. But, you know, we keep having this recurring theme in our conversations about co-development, co-design, change management. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. And by change management, I mean change management. But I think an insight that Dr. John added is that when you co-develop something that works with doctors and nurses, they will change on a dime. Right? So change management becomes easier when you work together on the design and development, because you have that ownership piece, right? That everyone has skin in the game. And then my last nugget that I wanted to share was John Beadle's insight that healthcare systems are asset rich and cash poor, right? We all know that they're cash poor, but they are rich in assets. And this whole idea that Aegis wants to partner with them to turn their assets into revenue and margin diversification strategies. And at the same time, taking the solutions that they're developing to increase their revenue to solve a core business challenge and reduce costs and cut out waste. It's that outside in innovation that you were talking about. No, sorry, the inside out innovation that you were talking about earlier. Fun fact, you said giant asset like 3 or 4 times at the end of the interview, and I could not bite my tongue hard enough. It was so amazing. So thank you for making that interview memorable for me. Anytime someone says asset in a meeting going forward, I'm going to think of you. It's a giant asset.
Yeah, we got some real giant assets out here. That's great. Those are fantastic nuggets. I thought the two of them have really hit on something meaningful, right? Mm-hmm. The whole bringing in a vanguard on this crusade of resources that healthcare systems may not have within them to leverage and scale their innovation, mm-hmm. right? Coming in with that expertise and meeting them where they are, just a brilliant way to go about it. So
yeah,
our hats off to them. And thank you for joining us. Well, you have reached the end of our episode, dear listener, and we are so glad that you once again spent your time with us. Do us a favor, if you would, please follow us on LinkedIn, leave us a review wherever you pod. That really helps our algorithms. And if you liked us, tell a friend. If you didn't like us, tell an enemy. But for goodness sake, please tell someone about the podcast. We'd love to talk their ear off too. Sarah, send us off with a spooky Halloween health tech haiku.
It would be my pleasure. Ghost in the network, data lost in shadows deep, AI whispers doom.
I've got chills. All right. See you all next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.
It's like my voice cracked.
Maybe you should go with Bobby Brady for Halloween.
Tech to the Limit is produced by Sarah Harper
and Elliot Wilson in consultation with ChatGPT.
Because they are masochists and also don't have any sponsors.
Yet. Music was composed by the world-famous court minstrel Evan O'Donovan.
To consume more hilarious and informative content about digital transformation in healthcare, visit us online at techittothelimit.fun.
And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and across the event horizon. See you next time on
Tech It to the Limit.